is Helton versus Seattle Police.
May it please the court, Gary Smith, representing the City of Seattle Police Department. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
All right. Proceed.
The city respectfully requests that this court reverse the trial court's award of attorney's fees and per day penalties under the Public Records Act and remand to the trial court with guidance for a proper calculation of both. In this case, the Seattle Police Department acted in reasonable reliance on existing case law in its initial response to Mr. Helton's public records request. After one round of briefing, after the initiation of this case and one round of briefing and a half-day hearing, the Supreme Court issued a controlling opinion. The city promptly disclosed the disputed records, yet the trial court ultimately awarded approximately $145,000 in attorney's fees and an additional $20,000 in per-day penalties.
Now, I assume, since I didn't see in the briefing that the court used the wrong number of days in its calculation, that the court did make some distinction between records properly withheld and improperly withheld.
Actually, the $45 per day was assigned to the entire period while the records were withheld. There was no distinction between days. Actually, the trial court didn't impose per day penalties after the Bainbridge decision, but the $45 ran from the date of Mr. Helton's request to the date of the Bainbridge Island decision. And one of the primary purposes of the Public Records Act is to...
And that your answer is different from what the judge was seeking. How? I mean, that's the point. The court made a distinction between those records which were not subject to the Bainbridge case and those which were. And you had improperly withheld those which weren't subject to the Bainbridge case. That was the court's position, was it not?
To be clear, they were the same records. The records that were withheld from the date of the request to the Bainbridge decision and when they were disclosed after the Bainbridge decision, it was the same category of records. And it was a $45 per day.
I don't know if that's apparent from the record, therefore apparent to the trial court, but we'll hear from opposing counsel on that, I suspect. Now, as to the attorney's fees, they're not punitive.
Correct.
So,
correct.
What evidence do you have that they're inappropriate?
Well, the trial court first employed a flawed methodology in determining the reasonable attorney's fees in this case, and then unquestioningly relied upon attorney fee affidavits to ultimately award attorney's
fees. What's the trial court supposed to rely on?
In this case, the trial court itself identified deficiencies in the attorney fee petition and gave specific direction to Mr. Helton's counsel to remedy those deficiencies.
So you're just going to, what you want us to do, did you put any evidence in contrary to the evidence that the trial court...
We did. We submitted evidence on reconsideration, evidence that...
On reconsideration. But at the time, did you put any in?
At the time, we performed a critical analysis of their attorney fee petition based on the judge's identification of deficiencies in that attorney fee petition, pointed out instances of duplicative work and conferencing, the same issues that the...
It's just a record review for our purposes, then. In other words, we look at the record, we see if the trial court had a reasonable basis for making the decision. The trial court paid, therefore no abuse of discretion. End of story.
That's...
So, now, why don't you go back to your legal point?
Well, the legal point is that the trial court relied unquestioningly on attorney fee affidavits. That is contrary to case law, and the trial court ignored the deficiencies in the attorney fee petition that it had previously identified.
Excuse me, what case law says the trial court shouldn't rely on attorney fee affidavits? Is that
unquestioningly, and not critically review them. The trial court here identified deficiencies, but then approved the same attorney fee petition containing those deficiencies.
Ah, isn't that an argument with whether or not you like the critical review, as distinct from whether or not the trial court engaged in it?
I think the question for this panel is
that... Which might be an appropriate argument, and maybe that'll be apparent when we review it.
The question for this panel is whether there is expert testimony that is in the record, whether this court should affirm the trial court's award, which may result in an excessive attorney fee award of up to $50,000 in taxpayer funds that are unjustified.
Don't play the taxpayer violin, please.
Would also just point out the per day penalties in this case and the trial court's application of the King County factors. The failure to properly consider those factors is an abuse of discretion, and if any aggravating factors are not supported by substantial evidence, that is also an abuse of discretion. Here, and the when determining the amount of the penalty, the existence or absence of an agency's bad faith is still the primary factor that the court should consider. That's still the case under Yusufian, even though the court also articulated 16 factors.
Even though they say they're not doing it, that's what they did.
Right, correct.
I'm a little sensitive about that.
I understand that, respectfully.
It's in your favor, obviously.
But I would point out that the trial court expressly found no evidence of bad faith in this case, and that, again, that is the primary factor to consider. The trial court relied on just two aggravating factors in its assessment of a $45 per day penalty, the same penalty that was applied in the Yusufian case, the same penalty that was applied in the case of gross negligence, poor training, failed communication, bureaucratic ineptitude, factually and legally incorrect responses. Those were all the facts under Yusufian that justified a $45 a day penalty. The trial court assigned that same level of a per day penalty in this case when the city relied on existing case law in its initial assertion of an exemption. The Bellevue case had established that employees have a privacy interest in their name associated with records of investigative records, disciplinary records where there is no finding of misconduct. The Bellevue case stood for the proposition that, and in the Bellevue case, the court didn't address the fact or the case where records were requested by the name of the employee. But you could, there was a privacy interest established in your name not being associated with disciplinary records where there was no finding of misconduct. The city relied upon the Bellevue case and the fact that the records here were requested with knowledge of who the employee was. The records did not reflect any finding of misconduct. And
but you didn't offer those records redacting the names of the individuals, I take it, and I suspect the court was impressed with the lack of evidence of meeting the purposes of the statute while meeting the concerns of the case law.
Again, I think the Bellevue case established that redaction was appropriate when you didn't have specific knowledge of the employee. That case dealt with, I believe, 40 to 50 separate disciplinary investigative files that were requested. Here, there was one disciplinary investigative record requested with knowledge of the employee who was at issue.
You have 3 minutes on rebuttal.
May it please the court, my name is Patrick Preston, and I represent respondent Turner Helton, who was the prevailing records requester in this PRA case against the Seattle Police Department. And we do ask the court to affirm the trial court's determination of the PRA penalty and reimbursement of our reasonable fees and costs that were necessary to obtain the records that SPD refused to disclose to Mr. Helton for over a year until he retained counsel and filed this action. Because the trial court's rulings were based upon sound legal authority and a careful examination of the facts, SPD has failed to demonstrate an abuse of discretion on appeal, and we ask the court to affirm. We additionally seek our fees and costs on appeal. Regarding the standard of review, we do believe its application here is dispositive, and the only two issues before today, the court today, are the penalty and the fees. For both, the trial court is afforded, in the words of the Supreme Court, considerable discretion under the deferential abuse of discretion standard of review. And we would submit that this court should reject SPD's attempt to re-argue the PRA violations that were found by the trial court or the facts that were presented by the parties. SPD did not appeal these violations, and they are verities on appeal. Likewise, we would submit that SPD has asked the court to substitute its discretion for that of the trial court regarding penalties and fees, but the controlling standard of review does not permit such review.
But, counsel, I take it their point is, look, we followed the law as we understood the law in good faith. It's wrong to kick us with a $45 a day penalty when we were doing what we thought was perfectly legal and required, in fact.
Well, there are two responses to that. One is under the standard of review, and the other is if the court wishes.
But isn't that a mitigating factor? And so it's a question of fact. Did they, in fact, follow the law at the time wasn't a finding of fact, you know, something the court needed to make and something that we would review?
The court's orders and the record reflect that the court specifically and expressly rejected that argument by the Seattle Police Department. The court found that the records were not exempt at the time they were requested, and that this was not, they were not produced as the result of intervening case law. The court specifically found that, and I think this court should take note that the Bainbridge Island Police Guild case did not involve the investigative records exemption that SPD asserted to withhold items such as the incident report from Mr. Helton in this case. It involved privacy issues that were not here.
Plural, and then there's records, plural. So did the trial court, did the trial court engage in an analysis for us on the record so we can discern just what might or might not be subject to that rather broad legal statement that they are, that they were not subject to, or the analysis wasn't changed legally by the Bainbridge Island case, which records we're talking about and how relevant they are to the overall result?
The court did reference it, but I'm not sure exactly what the court's question is here. The briefing and the argument of the parties.
Here's what the court's question is. The court's question goes to how in the devil we're supposed to make a determination as to whether a trial court exercises its discretion or not in setting penalties when it seems to be that whatever happens to be come out of a court somewhere with regard to a penalty, as long as it's an appellate court, that's what the trial court will seize on. Why $45 a day? That's not, this, does this case call for $45 a day as distinct from the minimum? Should it have been more? All of those issues are reviewable on appeal with regard to discretion. Because if we cannot find a reasonable basis for those distinctions, we would reverse. Now, just continuing to tell me about discretion in the trial court doesn't help me much, because we have a job to do in spite of the exercise of discretion in terms of reviewing its propriety. So where do I come up with $45 in this case from this record?
First, you start with SPD not challenging the PRA violation. That's a verity. That's established. They withheld records from Helton for over a year, and they did so under under exemptions that the court found and that are not before this court in this appeal were exemptions that did not apply at the time Helton requested the records. That's where we start. Then we go to the fact that this court applied Yusufian. It followed the law just as the Supreme Court would have it follow it. It cited Yusufian. It cited the aggravating and mitigating factors. It found a mix of both. And it imposed a penalty that was less than half of what has been described as the expansive penalty range. And when you look at the factors here, and just to clarify, too, before I miss this point, the records were of two kinds here. There was a records request form that Helton used, a check-the-box request form that the police department provided. And he sought the incident report, check-the-box, follow-up, and 911 records. None of those were provided for the entire statutory period. And then he attached to that SPD's own correspondence from the closed misconduct investigation, citing the different records that were reviewed in that case, in that investigation, which included things like his own statement. Those were all categorically withheld. And these were clearly before the court. So the violations that have been not challenged on appeal involved the withholding of all of those records for over a year. The aggravating factors that were present included both the unreasonableness of SPD's explanation for withholding these records and citing exemptions that didn't apply. They broadly interpreted these exemptions, which is contrary to the statute, and they did so in their own interests. The second aggravating factor here involved the public importance of imposing this PRA penalty to encourage law enforcement agencies to comply in good faith with the PRA's broad mandated disclosure. And those were established by the court. That's the court applying Yusufian. The court also found three mitigating factors and did not impose a penalty that was greater than half the statutory range. Again, I would ask the court to return to the abuse of discretion standard because the court is...
I wasn't departing from it, but you are supplying me with some ammunition with which to use it. which is what I was asking you to do. Mm-hmm. You've answered my question. Thank you.
Thank you. Turning, because my time is brief, to the fees issue, the court engaged in a similar analysis and a correct analysis applying Mahler versus Zooks on the fees issue and the RPC 1.5A standards. They are expressly in the order. Take a look at the December 30th, 2011
Yeah, but you can note from a number of decisions from this court that we're not very enamored with block bills that say conference or meeting or don't describe the actions that have been gone on. And we've sent any number of cases back and said, sorry, counsel, no fees for those entries that are not broken down with enough detail for a court to evaluate whether the time spent on those activities is reasonable.
Indeed, Your Honor, and the criticism of the trial court in this case was similar to that of Your Honor's. And for that reason, the court asked both parties to go back and provide a critical response looking at those issues. Helton returned with an expert fee declaration. An expert in PRA cases and attorney fees reviewed these entries. We discounted some of those, and the court discounted some of those on the final order. So we did take a look at the entries. They were block billing. The court did have concerns, but those concerns were met. And again, when we apply the abuse of discretion standard, Helton has satisfied his showing before the trial court, and that can't be turned around here unless this court finds that those itemized billings that were reviewed by an expert were manifestly unreasonable or based upon untenable grounds. SPD has failed that burden.
But the expert's in no better position to know whether the block of, you know, I worked an hour and a half on this, is meaningful or not.
The expert is in this case because the expert reviewed why we were doing the work that we did. And that expert reached the conclusion that it was SPD's approach to this case to dispute everything and to prolong and protract the proceedings that required us to do a lot of work to respond to what they were doing. They are the ones who are solely responsible for the penalty in this case and the fees that were incurred. And indeed, this is SPD's appeal today. And for these reasons, we would ask the court to affirm the trial court's PRA penalty and fees. If the court has no further questions, that concludes my presentation.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to first address the form of the request. Mr. Helton's initial request, and I would encourage the court to review it, and at pages 52 and 53 of the clerk's papers, requested the contents of a disciplinary investigative file. The Bellevue John Doe's case applied to disciplinary investigative records where there was no finding of misconduct.
Okay, but wait, don't we have a problem here? The trial court ruled against you on the substantive legal issues, so that the record for us is you weren't exempt from those disclosures as a matter of law. And now the question is, other factors in the list?
I don't.
Bainbridge didn't overrule any of those cases. I looked. Trial court said the law didn't protect you, the argument you're making.
At a minimum, the Seattle Police Department relied in good faith on existing law in applying the exemptions in response to the initial request. And then again, when the Bainbridge case was issued, the police department produced the records within 2 weeks, not only produced the records, but made a policy decision to change, not only produce the records in this case, but department-wide, and produce these records and not apply the same exemptions to disciplinary records in to comply with the holding in the Bainbridge case. And again,
you didn't overrule anything.
That's correct, but it goes to the level of fees, or excuse me, per day penalties should be based on the level of an agency's culpability. And here we were relying on existing case law in applying exemptions. And again, privacy-based exemptions that these are not policy formulation documents. These are privacy-based exemptions where the release of information could result in the harm to someone's reputation that would last for a lifetime. These are significant concerns, and SPD was trying to apply existing law at the time, and again complied with Bainbridge when it came down and changed the department's policy system-wide, and even sent out notice to prior records requesters whose records request had been denied and let them inform them about the change in law and the fact that they may be entitled to additional information from these files. That's also in the papers at 668. This is not an instance where the agency's level of culpability warrants anything more than minimal fees, even in light of the Bainbridge decision. And as the just to address the block billing, I would just point out that over 100 hours in this case are billed as billing entries that each include 9 or more disparate tasks per entry. 100 total hours billed under blocks, each of which include 9 or more disparate tasks. How is anyone to determine whether that is reasonable effort? How is the trial court to determine? How is an attorney fee expert to determine from that record? We ask that you reverse the trial court with proper instructions for a calculation of fees and penalties. Thank you.
Thank you.